At this point in time, I'd like to invite Rebecca Sweet Sweat to come and make a presentation.
There you go.
Yeah, you didn't get the word yet.
You didn't get the word? That's okay.
We also have Christina Paredes.
Yep. We'll get Christina's comments here too.
She's gonna kick it off.
She's gonna...
Yeah.
You're taking the lead.
Yes, thank you. No.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're on the floor.
I'm on the floor, I got the floor. Thank you so much for having us today. Talk a little bit about what the efforts that Office of Economic Vitality is undertaking and how we're really working to help promote Tallahassee and Leon County. We're really focused this year on some building capacity within our industry, within our office and within the industry to build that broader presence, not only across our community, but across the region, the state, nationally, and a little bit internationally too, with some of the efforts that we're going on here that Rebecca's going to talk about. I wanted to give you, I know this is, you're having your retreat, so I wanted to also provide you a quick snapshot of where we are as far as employment growth goes. Just so you can have a little idea to help feel some of your conversation today too. This is our current employment conditions here for the Tallahassee MSA. You're seeing we're back at a low. We haven't seen this unemployment rate at 2.9% since October of 2006. So it's historically low, which means we have to get even more creative of how we continue to enhance our talent pipeline, too. You can see where the job growth is by industry, something we get a lot. That's in our financial activities, professional business services, which is a targeted industry of OEB, leisure and hospitality and construction. That construction number is at 6.5%, but that doesn't include anything that we may see as a result of Hurricane Michael. So that's just kind of what it was before the hurricane, because these are all based on October numbers there. So we expect that one to go up as we move down. The biggest takeaway from this is what the private sector job growth is doing, 3.8%. When you include the public sector into that, that's a 1.9% growth, but when you isolate what the private sector in the community is doing, that's a 3.8% growth. And we've seen that number continue to go up.
Can I just ask you, how far does the Tallahassee MSA extend?
It's it is Wakulla and Gadsden County in Tallahassee.
Okay.
Is it just three counties? I'm sorry, I'm thinking four, but just three?
Yes.
Okay.
So specifically today, I wanted to make sure that I had the opportunity to introduce to you to Rebecca Sweat. She is our new hire at the Office of Economic Vitality. Rebecca, she'll tell you a little bit about it herself, but we're very excited to welcome her. She got her PhD here at HPMI, and she's going to be leading our business development activities within applied sciences and manufacturing. And she's going to talk to you a little bit about the efforts that we are strategically focused on. While we have four targeted industries, when you look at what we are world-class, internationally, globally known for and superior in, that's going to be your applied sciences. And so when we look at what our next steps is and how to take advantage of that and translate that into business development, that obviously comes towards manufacturing. And we're really thankful for the leadership that Dan Foss and Ricardo in particular have brought to the table to help us focus in on these efforts of what's next for Tallahassee and Leon County. What can we do to make sure that people know that we're the magnetic capital of the world? And we've hired Rebecca to focus solely on these two industries. That includes both business development from an expansion, relocation, and entrepreneurial pipeline. So the strong connection that we're hoping that Rebecca builds here with the board and Innovation Park is very important to us. And of course, Ron and Michael too, with the efforts going on with the incubator too. Those are all very important for us as we help foster growth and cultivate that here in our community. And with that, Rebecca, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Christina.
Well, first, welcome to our community.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you in this area, and we look forward to what value you add.
Thank you.
Yeah,
welcome back. Yeah, so a little bit of my background. So I got my PhD at FSU, at FSU College of Engineering in 2015. And then the company that sponsored my PhD hired me on to move to, and I worked as a research scientist in Greenville, South Carolina, at a company called Solvay. So it's an advanced materials and specialty chemicals company. So I worked for them for about 3 years, and I miss Tallahassee, Lorain County, so I'm back. So my husband and I, we have a lot of family in the area. So we're back and excited to see what opportunities we have for growth. I had
Can I ask you a quick question?
Absolutely.
You said this company sponsored you, right?
They sponsored my PhD, yes.
Because you already worked there and they wanted to train you up, sort of?
So they paid for my PhD here at FSU. Mm-hmm. And because they trained me, they had a position waiting for me once I finished.
Yeah.
And that was through HDMI also. And Richard Liang was my advisor here. And he has the next student is under her sponsorship as well.
Uh-huh.
So Solvay is still sponsoring a student in this area.
Okay.
So it's a really cool opportunity
for
companies to be able to sponsor students. And I think it's a great way to kind of move into the public sector and the private sector. That's cool. But what we also want to build is some of these companies, if they're located here, so that would be much better for the community, because then you're not exporting talent outside of this area.
Right.
Yeah. So go over a little bit of what we're trying to do here. So, as Christina mentioned, I'm focusing on applied science, innovation, and manufacturing. Just these sectors, and we're looking to build with the existing companies that are wishing to relocate or expand, and making sure that we don't miss our entrepreneurial ventures. And that's what we're working closely with Ron and Michael here, that we can get these companies that are coming out of Innovation Park to stay. So we know we have the world-class facilities here, and we're really looking to use what we have here and grow on it. So we're really good at magnetics, really good at materials, and so we want to make sure that we focus on our strengths and as we are looking to attract companies, and make sure that we can attract these companies that are relevant to our strengths. I want to be able to locate them with a cluster in mind to make sure that they are located properly in relation to the Innovation Park. And I'll speak a little bit to the site selection work that we're doing as well. But we want to make sure that obviously Innovation Park will get filled up. We want to make sure that they are happily located and properly located. But also in addition to our skilled jobs, we have kind of the medium skilled jobs, so we have technical skills. We want to make sure that these employment opportunities are captured as well. So working with like the TCC Center for Advanced Manufacturing, and make sure that these companies that come in, they'll need scientists, they'll need engineers, they'll need technicians, they'll need manufacturing technicians. So we want to make sure that the workforce is ready to fill these opportunities as these companies are growing to this area.
The beautiful part about is using the DanFoss and having DanFoss such a huge part of this effort is when you're looking at the type of workforce that they're hiring from your PhDs to your engineers to your skilled workforce too. So it really runs the gamut of better jobs for our community. And that's why this is such a great niche for us to focus on as a whole community, the growth within this sector. Because we know that one job changes a person's life, and how important it is that it's a good job with good benefits. And this type of companies that we're looking to duplicate with the DanFoss model really help with that area. And you heard a lot from both David and Ed today talk about the opening of opportunities as far as land goes. Well, we see that as a big win for us too when we're looking to market the community as that piece. You know, looking at what you're going to see in 5 years here really opens the potential for our community as far as development goes from a business industry standpoint.
Yeah, and just to reiterate, Christina mentioned that the unemployment rate is quite low. We want to make sure that the underemployment is also addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that people are employed in good jobs and jobs that they can grow. That way they'll stay in our community and make our community a better place.
We export way too much talent.
It's true.
We do. We retain about 12 to 13% of the students that graduate out of FSU and FAMU, and that retainment is about what we can hold as far as a job perspective. So that 12 to 14% is how many students graduating from FAMU and FSU get a full-time job and stay in our community. And that, to that end, that's about what we can handle right now as a whole community. So with our efforts, the efforts that you're focused on here as a board, to be able to grow our community as a whole, that makes it more attractive, provides more opportunity for people to stay too.
Of that 12 to 14%, do we know how many are natives of Tallahassee that are staying home?
It was for that reason that we did not bring in like a TCC population into that mix. We focused mostly on the higher ed, but I don't know how many of them had a permanent address here before.
And what number would you say was desirable if we could work it up to what?
All that depends on our job capacity, though.
Yeah, what would you like to see that number?
100%.
What's the standard for other large colleges retaining their community?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't think we have that data. Let me rephrase that. I don't have that data on me today.
Yeah.
But I'll have to challenge our research team. They may have that as a comparative statistic already, and I just may not know it off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But we'll certainly look into that. Either way, find that information.
That way you can benchmark it, right?
Yeah.
Just as a comparative community, I lived in Greenville, South Carolina, which is right next to Clemson. And they do retain quite a lot more because of the BMW, Michelin.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of manufacturing companies right close to Clemson. And so a lot of the students do that.
I would think 12% would be a very low number of what we should aspire to have.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
We want to see that number grow for sure.
Yeah.
I 100% agree with that.
And the relationships with the incoming companies, as what was mentioning, having them either sponsor or co-work on projects here in the Innovation Park and with the universities is key to keeping that talent here.
KCCI just started a big initiative. It's going on. They're sponsoring it this year, but they've had it before out of universities called Experience Tallahassee. So it is focused on university students. So FAMU, FSU, and I believe TCC is invited to at the table. And it's the highlight. It's held at Cascades Park. And it's the highlight, the resources that are in Tallahassee from a student, as well as the activities as well that are available. It's a great event to get involved in. They have three different components of it. I know we're sponsoring that event, and it'll be held on January 12th, I believe, this year.
And to go on to that, we are also sponsoring that event as well, and we will have a presence there. We will be having a presence there.
Christina, as you look at those numbers long term, I do think it would be an interesting thing as someone who had three kids and one of them went to FSU and he stayed and doesn't want to leave Tallahassee. I think it is sort of that net number of how many of them are Tallahassee natives that stay, because I bet it's a relatively high percentage.
Yeah.
And that would give us a little bit clearer number.
We'll see if we can drill down into both of those.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting to see how our research team pulled together that information. They worked with DOE, so the Department of Education, to get those reporting numbers that they had instead of having students self-report, because that's how the universities collect that information right now. So it was statistically done, so we'll have to see if we can take it a step further and get those actual addresses before.
Well, I had two sons. Neither live here now. One did work for Elbit, but Elbit transferred to Massachusetts, or actually to New Hampshire. But I look forward to having more families say we could keep our children here. Christina, you had a doctor.
It was me,
Kristen.
Yeah, that's all right. Welcome back, Rebecca. So I like the direction, and I think those numbers about the native population and what a typical range might be would be really helpful. So that's good. we don't want the numbers to go up too much before we get the EDA grant, because this was how we got the, or applied for the 63 schools. So there's teeny tiny silver lining right now, but maybe that'll help. But this data that you were just describing, is this some of what we use for the EDA grants, or was that...
I'm not sure what we got from you guys.
Okay.
We got it from a couple of different sources.
Not retention numbers.
Not the retention numbers, actually. We got some of that information from the Regional Planning Commission.
Yes.
But I just did a quick search just as a point of benchmarking. 7% of Cornell graduates stay in Ithaca, and if you've ever been to Ithaca, you pretty much know why. But the average is around 30%.
That's
according to this.
Of all graduates?
Of all. Yeah,
is that self-reported data, or?
I didn't drill down. I just was curious enough that I had to Google it.
That's good. That's good to know. So, what were you saying?
Well, just on this, if there is additional information, data statistics about the retention numbers, that may be something we want to provide to Greg, just for the EDA grant, because that was a critical piece of that. But I think, Becca, you actually represent a third group that we might want to look at, which is the boomerang effect, that we have a lot of people go out, and whether they're natives or people who've been here for school, they go out, they find another job, and then they realize this is really the best place to raise a family, or they build connections here, or other things like that. So that is another category, particularly for the professional, for the advanced degrees, because you can't necessarily be hired at FSU if you get a degree there. But that experience, Tallahassee, and those things that we do early on, it seems like probably help attract people back. And the alumni efforts from the universities, would that be fair to say?
That definitely will be. And I think that's a good sector to be targeting, because they have more experience.
Yes.
And so you might actually want those... you obviously want both, but
yeah.
You, as opposed to a fresh graduate that doesn't have any experience, so you need kind of both of those.
We need a little bit of everybody. If 30% is the average, that makes sense, because we're not going to retain everyone. But there, I hadn't thought about this until you started talking through these numbers, but there may be a way to work with FSU and FAMU on the alumni communication in the future about what we're doing, so that if someone is attached to the community, they have opportunities coming back. It's not a sector that we've really targeted before, but they've done much better.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And personally, from the graduates that I've seen here, they love the area. They just don't have a company to work for in their specific degree.
Right.
And so I don't think that will be a hard sell. But the just initiating that communication.
That's it. They got to know how we grow.
I think this is a good example, because about a year ago, we had a engineering graduate from FAMU FSU that finished an internship with us. And he was really, really good. But he had an offer from United Technologies in Boston. And he just wanted to see how big the world was.
Mm-hmm.
Within 6 months, he called us back and asked us, was there any way to come back
to
Tallahassee? So,
were you
so
able
we,
to make that
yeah,
work?
We made it work.
Good.
Because we wanted to hire the guy anyway.
Great.
But he's from Tallahassee, and he said, well, I guess it's not as good as I thought it was, so he came back. So.
Did he call you in the middle of January?
He did.
That happens too.
If I may, I just wanted to add, if you know Duke University, you might want to benchmark with FSU around the Chapel Hill area.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunity, and their numbers are 16%.
Yeah.
And by the way, community colleges are 78%.
Yeah.
That's huge. I'm
that
glad you mentioned
sense,
advanced
yeah.
manufacturing, because that facility is just waiting to be activated in a lot of ways. So.
But if
yeah.
you think about Duke at 16 and we're at 12,
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's surprising.
So,
I'm shocked.
Yeah,
with all the work around the triangle.
Yeah.
So we just want to make sure that we're encompassing all levels of.
I think
of
also from
trades.
A private sector standpoint, reference Mobile again.
Mm-hmm.
They have one of the best training programs for the state.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered to be a role model, because Mercedes and all those guys have moved there, so they have all this training for technical workers in Mobile. And if we could have something like that in the area also, because we're trying to do that ourselves and we're not good at it. And so
if there was, that's something that you could benchmark, that I think that would be really good also.
Yeah, taking a look to see what Buffalo's done too. They have a really neat manufacturing facility there too, where not only do they train the workers, but also your company can go in there and use those machineries too. So I'll have to take a look at the Mobile one. Thanks for that, Paul.
Yeah, I'll forward it to you.
Yeah, please do. Okay.
The chamber took a trip over to Austin 10 years ago, and at one point, one of the ladies at one of the big chip makers was giving the chamber the tour of the facility, and it turned out that she was an FSU FAMU graduate. And I asked her about how she got to Austin, and she said, oh, I didn't want to come to Austin. I would have loved to stay in Tallahassee. There were just no jobs. That's what we have to overcome.
And we try to recruit a lot.
Yeah.
And most of the time when the type of people, employees we're trying to recruit, they have professional spouses.
Yeah.
And so we extend them a job, but their spouse can't find a job, so they turn the job down. And that's one of the other issues that we have.
And that's I'm glad you mentioned that, Paul, because you know a lot of, like, TMH runs into the same problem, and a lot of local dentistries run into that same problem too when they're recruiting. So we've begun having conversations with Choose Tallahassee. How many of you guys are familiar with the Choose Tallahassee efforts? So right now they're all focused on boomers, and they have realized that they've been able to penetrate the market and getting a lot of interest in there. So they've been discussing on their board on what a 2.0 looks like. What if they marketed your 8 to 80s? So we've been working with them as far as partner opportunities to partner on helping with that message too, from an 8 to 80s perspective. So you're covering a large range to help with that. They got a brand out there. They're already got a lot of marketing headway under there. So how can we take advantage of that as far as communicating that quality of life, why Tallahassee is such a great place to be? So we just began those conversations this fall.
You know how Ed was talking about maybe just looking at, not just looking at Tallahassee, but looking at the surrounding counties?
Yes.
I think that's the other thing we need to do in the area, because there may be a manufacturer in Thomasville that person's spouse can get employed at, which is 30-minute drive, 40-minute drive. That's okay also. But they don't have any idea when they come and interview with us that within 45 minutes there may be something in another county that they could actually look at also as well.
Bainbridge just had a big announcement with the Taurus gun manufacturing here too. So there's some opportunities as far as that goes too.
There's a centralized job board where you could say, you could promote your job opportunities so that people could see that there's a lot in this market.
Some co-branding with the others. Georgia, all of that.
Right? Absolutely,
In the old EDC environment, they used to publicly display of the prospects that were out there, sort of low, possible, probable, kind of where are we with active prospects?
Go ahead,
Rebecca.
Next slide.
Okay, yeah, so to this effort, we've kicked off at the Magnetic Task Force group has kicked off an effort with OAB and ROI, research on investment, to develop leads for companies that are wishing to expand or relocate to the Tallahassee-Leon County area. And so we're working with them to develop a list of qualified leads for companies and reaching out to them to find out, are they looking to expand? Are they looking to relocate? And get them here, get them the ones that are qualified and are looking to relocate or expand, and get them here and get them a visit with this area, us and yourself included. And that's part of what I wanted to talk about today, to kind of develop a cooperative plan, because this is kind of a sales pitch. Also, once we find a company that wants to be here, we need to find them a site, and we need to convince them that this area is the right place to be and get them connected with people. Maybe they work with compressors, so we need to get them talking to Dan Boss, or they're working with a magnetic-enabled technology. We need to get them talking to the mag lab. So we want to make sure that we're targeting our industries of applied science, innovation, manufacturing, but also highlighting what we're good at here. So aerospace, materials, electronic devices, that those kind of things. So making sure that, that the companies that we're targeting are right for this area. And so we kicked that off. I just got the second batch, I haven't told you. So we have 200 companies that I'm going through right now that ROI is reaching out to as we speak. And in addition to this effort, we're going to the Magnetics Conference in Orlando in January. And we're also sponsoring a reception there as well. So we're looking to reach out to companies that are there, and obviously they're in magnetics and they're likely familiar with the Mag Lab, but they might not be familiar with this area. So yeah.
Oh, this is the conference that you send a couple of your engineers to. Ricardo put it on our radar last year, and it was a great conference that really I went with Jeff Whalen, who serves on our magnetic task force, and it was a great opportunity. The idea was kind of figure out where our place was in a conference like that. So we went and had some really good conversations with the companies there, talked to them about our efforts, Jeff from a technical standpoint, and then myself from just what is going on in Tallahassee to help people understand those efforts too. And we clearly recognize the value for that. So those lessons that we have learned have both helped inform the work of the Magnetic Task Force moving forward. It was a big influence in the type of person we went and targeted to help lead those efforts, which resulted in Rebecca. It was absolutely wonderful to host the ROI team here in our community. I knew Rebecca had been on the job 2 days, and I knew within 24 hours that it was the right decision to have her on the team. As the scientist at HPMI is talking, you know, you look at these site consultants that are nodding their head, and Rebecca says, what this means for us in business development opportunities is this. And the light bulb went off, and we were off running. And now I think Rebecca's been on for 3 years.
Does that conference move?
Working like that.
Is that based in Orlando every year, or does it move?
It is based in Orlando every year, but there is future hope of mine is to one day bring that here. So we'll see how successful we are on that. It's a fairly large conference too. So
I know Dan Paul says in the past taken 52 passenger busloads to conferences in Orlando. Yeah. Maybe there's an opportunity to bring at least a small bus of people from that conference here for a half day or a full day or an evening or a dinner or a luncheon or something as a part of that conference.
And and those initiatives start first with just hosting the reception and demonstrating the value that we bring.
And along with hosting that reception, we are getting a list of a lot of the attendees that are there, and so we're going to reach out prior. And so there might be an opportunity to do something like that. We'll find out here soon.
There's a co-branding opportunity that we're doing with the Mag Lab and the Mag Task Force to help brand the World Magnetic Capital for these specific efforts. So there's a lot of activity going on. And Rebecca says 200 company names. Those lists still have to be gone through, combed through, and qualified too. And then hopefully eventually add it into our project pipeline. But that doesn't mean we won't continue to reach out to all 200. We're working on marketing efforts for those outreaches too.
That's a good point. All those 200 are not qualified yet, but we're making sure that they are in the targeted industries and they will be reached out to find out if they are interested in those kind of things.
Kristen, you had a question or comment?
My question second, first, and this is no shock to you, Christina. This is just everything. We keep saying that. This is fantastic. We could look back and say, why in the world was the first time we ever attended this conference last year? But we're making incredible progress in the last 2-3 years. So, and Christina, your efforts have been remarkable. So I'm thrilled to hear you're fitting right into that, Rebecca. This is exciting. So before we got into this conversation, you said something about a cooperative plan for recruits as you go through these 200.
That's correct.
So my two questions there are, when we see recruitment efforts in other states and other locations, from my perspective, it is something we talked about, there is more of a collaborative, I love that you use that word, there's a collaborative approach. We know what we're doing before the company comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And it is everything from the sectors and the resources to
the realtors, the housing, the schools, everything like that. So is that what you mean by that collaborative plan? And are you getting information from OROI? Is that how we're, yeah, we say it? Okay, from them about any gaps in what we have to present to other companies, or is this internal?
This is more of a an us kind of thing.
Yeah, okay.
So ROI is more of the reaching out, finding out. They're kind of selling the Tallahassee Leon County area.
We need to give them something.
We need to give them something. So okay. if they call us up today and say this XYZ company is ready to go, they want to get on a plane and go see you next week. I want to know who I can call at this table. Say what's our plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to have that plan before that call, because if we have a call right now, I couldn't say that we would be exactly
ready. This is ready, set, go strategy.
Yeah. This is something we've never heard.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ron, go ahead.
So
yes, that's his strategy, right?
Yeah,
but it's all the way from the selling process, but it's also what we have to sell and what we're ready with for our own purposes.
Yes.
On a slight side note, and then I want to get some opinions on that as well, but... we are under process with a contract for a strategic sites inventory,
mm-hmm.
and so that will be kicked off here in the next couple weeks, and so we will also have that as kind of ammunition in our pockets, ready to go. So when the companies do come here, not only do we have the kind of selling of the area and the communication there, we have a kind of a map saying where would you best fit. So
okay.
and then
I think you had a comment. Yeah, I had
a question. What you're describing here certainly is the right thing to do. I'm wondering about what the timeline for really getting into the process might be. I think from what I've heard so far today, there's a real sense of urgency, and so that the sooner we actually get, you know, down to the nitty gritty, the better.
Yes.
And I assume that as you qualify companies, you make contact, and then we're not going to get all our ducks in a row and then start. We're going to go along as we see opportunities. Is that correct?
That's correct. But I'd like over the next few weeks, month, to have something in place.
Yeah, you have to. One thing that's very important to note here is that this isn't a 12-month process, and we're going to be successful. We may have a small bunts and singles. But this is a long-term commitment that we're making as a community to invest in these efforts. So it may be, and deals like this take a while. They're three years if you're lucky. So this is a long-term commitment that we all need to be able to willing to make together. When you look at the great industry that Greenville was able to develop, it was a 20-year commitment by their whole community, their politicians, their research boards, and everything, to really build out and focus on the automobile industry. And that's what we're laying the groundwork for today, for the success over the next 5 to 10 years. This is because we just won't stop with one company. We'll continue to build on that. We'll take the little wins and build on that and build that momentum. And it's really key that we develop strong regional, strong local relationships, strong regional relationships, and strong statewide relationships as well to help with those efforts.
And it is a long-term strategy, and because as ROI and us have noted, a company that we really think is a great fit may be like, well, we're just not ready to expand yet.
Mm-hmm.
But in a year, we want us to be the first one on their mind saying, okay, we're ready to expand, who do I call?
And then if they're still not ready, what about in 7 years? We just want to be positioned that we're ready. And when we're bringing somebody into our community, you're looking at tier A conversations, so that initial one of, yes, we want to welcome you, you need to be here. Tier B, now you're bringing in the realtors to talk to people as they start getting serious, and the school systems and those types of things. So you'll tier out the conversations and the visits based on how hot that prospect gets.
Okay.
There's
a follow-up question.
Oh, I'm sorry, follow-up.
I guess one of the problems you can come up with is that bureaucracy gets in the way a little bit, too much talk and not enough action. And it sounds to me like, from what I'm hearing, that it doesn't have to be perfect. It's as soon as you've got some potential information, just jump out there and try, And then you'll learn a lot from that, and you fine-tune your approach and things like that. But again, not waiting for the ducks to be in a row. You just, wherever you're at now, you just jump out there and start.
You know, we have 16 active projects right now in our pipeline that are qualified moving through. Four of those are really hot. The majority of ours comes from referrals and self-generated by our office. So we are jumping in feet first and not waiting. The process with ROI is a process that we've laid out that we're working with them, working with the Magnetic Task Force on all that. So we're not letting bureaucracy stand in our way. We are hitting the ground running.
Have any of those companies been contacted yet?
Oh, we're 30 days in. So the fact that we got 200 company lists is pretty remarkable as Rebecca and the ROI team comb through those lists.
The first 50 are already being contacted as we speak.
Okay, great.
So like Christina said, we're not waiting, but this is timely because we've got, 50 emails out there right now that we don't know when they're going to be responding, and then another 150. So we have active project that we're contacted with.
Okay, Ann, and then Ron.
I'm sorry to jump back, but what is ROI? I should know.
ROI is research on
a separate company.
Yes. They're a consulting company.
You hired.
Yes. They're an international company that works works internationally with both companies as well as EDOs as far as developing. They're based out of Montreal to develop leads and business generation in here. I know Enterprise Florida uses them as well for some of their prospects too. So
they're like a consulting firm that their job is to generate leads or to match.
Both. They data mine and relationship build to find the companies that are in the best position to be able to start conversations as far as what it would like to locate a presence there or even pick up and relocate themselves.
And why would a company go to ROI to be matched? You know? I know why you would go to them. Why would the
ROI is going out to companies to talk to them.
Over 15 years of experience in this area too.
But what do the companies get out of it? That's what I'm to try to grow their businesses.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Bottom line
to
growth.
To find a community best fitted to them. ROI, knowing that the people that work for ROI, that they had a visit here, like Christina said, my first week on the job. And to get an idea of our community. And they came and they visited Ron and Michael here also. We went around the labs to get an idea of the community. They want an idea of this community because they are very connected consultants as well. And I wouldn't doubt that a lot of businesses would contact some of these people that have been in, say, the aerospace industry for 30 years.
Do both sides pay them?
We pay them, yes.
The companies don't pay them?
Not the companies aren't paying them for our efforts. We're paying them for our efforts.
Basically, what they're doing is they're using databases of data to identify certain parameters that indicate somebody might want to expand and relocate that expansion somewhere, just in a nutshell. So they're using that data to figure out who to contact. And they have a certain methodology that they've used, and it's apparently been effective. They're very economic development focused. It's not just...
Okay.
You know, they have site selection experience. They've got a lot of that. And actually, that's what I wanted to bring out. But we did host them here. Mm-hmm. They had five of their folks here. Christina and Rebecca came. I gave them the whole PowerPoint.
Yep.
And then the next day they hosted something down at the Innovation Center at TCC. And Steve Jast, is that right?
Yes.
Their president spoke at that. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Denise and I were able to sit in on a webinar with Steve Jast. He did a webinar for the Association of University Research Parks. We actually have a link to that if you guys are interested to see what their methodology is all about. But he went into a lot more depth than what he did at the presentation he did for us, but it was really interesting to see their process. But they've got, matter of fact, they've got their own system that they sell, apparently the
Gazelle
AI, where other people can use their system to do their own research. So, but they've got people on staff apparently that are doing that for you.
Yes, we also have a subscription into that too as part of our contract.
And does ROI interface with site selection people?
Yes.
So they might find something and then introduce to the correct
site selection team.
And the same works for us too when we're out meeting with the site selectors, notifying our ROI too, this so they can see who's on there and who may be the best match for us and the efforts. Maybe they've talked to one of those selectors communities already or companies that they represent and help coordinate those conversations as well. So they are the goal is 200 jobs within the first 3 years of the contract. A guaranteed 50 qualified meetings. These means these are companies that are primed and ready to go in or will be primed and ready. And so that's kind of how we're measuring the metrics on that right now. And that's a 3-year contract that we're entered into them.
Right. Thank you.
And 200 jobs within 3 years.
Within 3 years, yes.
And those will be high-paying jobs.
Yes, within the sector, or within this sector.
Okay. All right. Rebecca, I apologize that we're jumping in right
yeah.
on top of
yeah.
your presentation.
No,
continue on, please.
That pretty much caps it out. So yeah, we're doing a lot of the branding that, like we mentioned before, we're branding Florida Capital for Business and also the Magnetics Capital of the World. So we're branding that out so the world can know we're ready.
Well, we want you to know that we are ready to support, to actively be involved, to assist you in any way, to show our property night, day, weekend, wherever it needs to be. We want to make things happen, not only in Tallahassee, but specifically we'd like to see them happen here. We really believe on what Ricardo and others, Steve Evans and whoever's putting together the magnetic process, we believe that had real opportunity. And there'd be no better place for them than the house than right here. So thank you both for being here today. We will open the field now for a little more questions if you have any comments, suggestions around the room.
Well, Dave, on that note, I want to thank you and the board and Mike and Ron for all your support. It really means a lot that we're all rowing in the same direction. Rebecca mentioned our next step is taking a site inventory analysis. Those results I'll bring back to you, Ron, too, so we can see how we can help you position the park to be able to seize on these opportunities if those come down. It was a pivotal moment when we selected ROI. I was like, great, we're moving forward. Where are we going to put the people? So turning to our regional partners and what's available in Wakulla and Gadsden, you know, they're building on that logistics and freight area. So how we can all use this whole effort to really elevate our entire community and region.
Mr. Chair, quickly, does the tie into something I mentioned earlier when the mayor and David were here, the site selection inventory. Opportunity Florida did this for the other 8 counties in our regional planning council, not for Leon. So, but you're using the same company.
Yes.
OEV Blueprint Board authorized this in September. It was targeted on this sector. I'd still love it to be expanded, but we'll talk about that later. But hearing a presentation from that principal of the site selection inventory company, Christina was at the meeting. It was really eye-opening at the depth that they go to about the sites, from permitting to reaching out to people who may want to sell. They didn't limit it at just sites that were for sale or available at this time. And that it was really interesting to see that. So I'm really excited about this piece, but it ties in with something you said. Eric, you're not wrong. If there's an opportunity, we got to take it. The long game, and Christina, check me on this if I'm saying it wrong, but I think what you're talking about with the really digging in for the future, if people start to see us as not ready in the first 10 companies, we're not going to get the next 10 or 20 as easily. We need this cooperative plan because, from my perspective, this is me talking, I think we look like a joke when we go after Amazon. And there's no way in any world that we are going to even qualify for their basics. I understand the motivation for doing that, you know, last year and everything. But there is a point where we have to.
Amazon's listening to you.
I don't doubt it.
They are. Trust me, they are.
Yeah, okay. So I do love Amazon. I order lots of things.
Your 2-day shipping just went to 4.
I do want them to pay sales tax, but it's a whole commission. Anyhow, I think that this is critical, and for us, the next conversation is covenants and restrictions and other things like that to be ready to do that. So, but that is what you were describing with the long vision with this. Is that right?
Keeping everybody focused and moving forward and knowing what we're good in, what we're globally superior on, being strategic in the way that we reach out to them, bring them into our community, and encourage them to stay here too. So,
is there anything going on in the city or county to try and streamline the process down to the bare bones?
Absolutely. You just heard a lot of it. And if maybe we should have said this up front, most of you probably know this, but Christina is now the director of OEP. Mm-hmm. Very excited about that. And worked tremendously hard to.
We're happy for you.
Yes, thank you.
You
so
deserved it.
Before
I'm talking about permitting and just the mechanics.
Right. Well, and so I didn't mean to give you kind of a short answer there that this is it. But from my perspective, I mean, we have come light years. What you heard from John earlier, mm-hmm. From my perspective on county, there we've done a tremendous amount, but there are things in land use and permitting kind of that are related to this scope that we've been moving on, but now, how should I say this? The holistic reason for looking at land use in a certain way, carving out a zoning for what do we do? It was innovation.
Yeah.
And that's where it's starting to tie in. So yes, it's there, but I'm hoping that we move much more quickly because of what we're learning right now, of what we need to do to prepare ourselves, gives us that push to do it. Is that fair?
Conversations are moving in a way that they haven't moved in before, so it's really good on both sides.
Yeah.
So it's good to see and feel that and know that we're a growing city with a growing population, which is huge because there's a lot of communities out there that are not in that position. We have a vibrant university system and a great community college that can all help fuel workforce development. And we have world-renowned research. You can't ask for, and a great quality of life, you really can't ask for a better mix of things to promote and market. So we our big issue is letting people know that we're here, because we've been very silent over the last many years, for good, bad, indifferent. But you know, that's something that we also need to very strategically focus on, is those key marketing relationships or that key marketing effort in the relationship building to let people know that we're here.
So if you had some early interest, I'm analogizing this to the EDA grant and how people in a very short period of time move heaven and earth to get the thing out on time and so forth. If one of your contacts, early contacts, expresses considerable interest, is there an ability somehow to move heaven and earth to accommodate them?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
And I think it's better than it's ever been. For the EDA example, we could not have moved in 2 months had we not done the work we've done at this board in the last 3 years, in the last 8 years, period.
I'll give you an example of that. The week before Thanksgiving, it's the Thursday, I get a phone call, hey, we're coming in town on Monday. Cleared schedule, gave Rebecca a whole bunch of things that she didn't need to work on so we could host somebody in on a Monday and a Tuesday, and we're continuing to work with that company and provide that assistance. So we absolutely will move heaven and earth to host somebody here in our community and help make that case on why they should choose us to be here.
Well, the last home run this community really hit out of the park was Danfoss. That was maybe 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We are due. I think we're at this point in time now saying we fully understand that in the community. We've put the resources together to get that next home run. I want to, in the absence of saying we'd love just to have you keep going, we got to kind of move on here. So let me make the last round of if there are any other comments, questions, and such. And then
I have a quick one.
Yes, okay.
I'm sure you thought of this, and it's a little bit in the weeds, but have you done any video snippets of people like David, who's been here for 100 years, had 16 kids and stayed here, and then Rebecca, who graduated, went away and came back. That would be a good message to mix it up from me, the gray hairs, to the millennials.
We are working on all those marketing efforts, yeah.
Because that would be really good, short, sweet, and here's why we're here.
If you don't know, if you haven't listened to it, I encourage you to, because you know we want to make sure that we are working with the entire community too and elevating messages that are already out there. KCCI just launched a podcast called Think TLH. Dr. Greg Bovinger was just on in early November. I mean, I've learned a lot about people that I've known for a while by listening to these podcasts. So those are things too that we're promote and push out as well. So please do take a listen to those podcasts. They're really, really, and even WFSU is doing a great job with voices that inspire. So being able to take those types of things that are already being developed and promote those as well is something that we're working with our partners on too.
Okay, thank you again for your willingness to be here, spend time with us, and let me extend to you the invitation. Every first Thursday of every other month we meet, and we'd love to have you as guests and visitors, and we'll allow you some time to brief us a little bit if you'd like on the newest prospect or whatever. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to, at this point in time, call on April and Ron to real quickly review our 2018 financials and how we ended the year.
I had about 2 hours allocated to this,
but so we'll keep it short. Yeah. I'm going to turn the details over to Ron, but I would say this is the end of my first year as treasurer, and I have been very impressed with the fiscal accountability that comes throughout the park. I get a weekly summary of all the checks that have been written, the monthly summaries, and they're always complete. And Ron, as complete as I think they are, then Ron always pipes in with, hey, wait a second, you miscoded this, what about this? And you know, he has a bunch of questions for our management team. So I think that it really speaks well, and I appreciate the integrity that you bring to our finances. So thank you. Makes it easy for me.
Nice to have
that's
CPA.
My goal.
Nice to have CPA in a chair. In
That's right.
Former,
right? Once a CPA, always a CPA.
I wanted to give you the highlights from year end, because I know, you know, we kind of hit the monthly stuff in the treasurer's report, and we never really go back and look and kind of see. But this is, what I have right now is the unaudited financial statement presentation that you'll see in the actual audit. The only thing I'll tell you is that we don't have the, for those who have been around, the GASB 68 entries, which is the former retirement system stuff we're required to do. Has absolutely no impact on cash flow. It's just basically adjusts the liability we have for whatever the state is doing, but we have to help pay for it, so that's why that liability gets recorded on our end. So that's where you see down there below where it says deferred outflow of resources. There's also a deferred inflow on the next screen, and then anyway. So just to kind of give you the highlights on the big changes, on the accounts receivable side, you see that it went up $58,000. Well, that's a combination of things. The trail deposit. We put $185,000 down with the county to pay for the trail. All $140,000 of that is still basically a receivable because the rest is construction in progress. The lease changes accounted for $38,000, and the bin collection accounted for $38,000. It's what we actually collected, I believe, last year. So, as far as the change in fixed assets, you see that's $153,000. We had $45,000 in the construction progress on the trail. We had $83,000 expended so far on the restroom renovations in Morgan and in the Fuqua atrium, and which we still had a little bit to go in this fiscal year, about I think $11,000, and then obviously the rest is the depreciation. Any questions on the asset side? On the liability side, so you see again, there's down below, you'll see the deferred inflow of resources. That's a GASB, government accounting standards terminology. It's a little different from what people are used to in the private sector. The biggest change here is accrued expenses. Just the way we accrue annual leave and sick leave, that went up 5,000. HVAC, we had a unit that we had gotten into accounts payable, so we accrued that. But other than that, really no other major changes on the debt side. Good news is we don't have any long-term debt. The on the revenue expense and net position, the big changes there, you see, this is what always makes me feel good, is the $250,000 extra revenue that we had. So Anthropology accounted for 153 of that, and IT services, less the SBDC move out, was 96,000. The other income, that is predominantly the Bing recovery that we had in 2017 that we didn't have in 2018. And then we had a grant through FAMU, we received $11,000. That's what's going towards the SBIR, SCTR training program that Michael's doing. And then we had some extra salary expenses because of hiring Michael. And that's obviously not all Michael, some of that's the some of the employee benefit side as well. The other expense, again, most of that's the GASB 68 that's not been made this year, but it was obviously had been made last year. And then we had increased expenses in utilities and janitorial because of FSU Anthropology and IT services. So it's still not bad when you look at that on a net basis. Any questions about that? So on the cash flow side, again, pointing out that the GASB 68 had no impact on cash. The trail expenditures, you see there's the explanation for the capital expenditures in the restrooms. What I'd like to point out is, if for those of that have been closely involved with the budgeting process, when you looked at, and I'll show you on the, I think it's the next screen we look at the budget, but we had projected this year to have net operating income of 127,000. That was our forecasted when we did the budget. It's actually 134,000. And I just want to show you, even though you look at this and it's, you know, cash provided by operations, it's 20,000. Our net operating income includes the interest income, but does not include depreciation. So I just kind of want to show you how we got to, our budget basis does include these accounts receivable and these changes here. So just to sort of reconcile the two, that's how we got there.
And interest income up $18,000 was pretty impressive. So
what's that?
Interest income on...
Oh, yes, absolutely.
$18,000 up. That's just idle stuff sitting there that wins us big time. And I think that'll even be better next year, except we're going to lower the cash, so that hurts a little bit. But
yeah.
The yield will be higher.
And we're doing our best to manage that. We have moved funds around a little bit to try to optimize that. The only scary part right now is when you see the yield curve start to invert. That could portend some interest rate reductions, I think, coming. We just don't know yet. It's still early. Mm-hmm. If you've read anything about that interest rate conversions, it's it may not be as bad as it looks yet because of which ones they're looking at, but we'll see. So this was the budget that y'all approved. So we've got, this is the one for this upcoming year. But I just wanted you again to see, this is kind of where we had forecasted when we did the budget, 127. That's what came out to 134 in reality. But again, our budget is, there's not a lot of wiggle room here. And then the $1,815,000 is what we had originally set aside for Collins. If and when we get the grant, that $1,800,000 will go towards that, but it's not likely to all be spent the first year. It's probably going to take two and a half fiscal years for that to be expended. So the big number to focus on, though, since this is all coming out of reserves, is really that 15. We got to make sure we manage to keep that where it is. Just wanted to point out a few financial issues that we're faced with looking down the road. IT services lease ends May 2019. That's about $220,000. FSU Anthropology, we talked about, $188,000. National Park Service, their lease, they have a 5-year lease or 10-year lease with five of that being a firm lease. The other five, I believe they have a 60-day out. The good news is starting in February of 2020, we get a $28,000 a year increase that was built into the lease. And we've talked about DOT in the past. In 2022, based on the the lease that was negotiated before we all got here. It drops $100,000 per year for 5 years, starting in 2022. So we're going to have to cover that. And Stephanie, who escaped before we could talk about this, told me yesterday that the elevator folks are saying we have two elevators, one in Morgan in the atrium and one inside of Johnson, may need major overhauls in the near future at $75,000 a piece.
Yikes.
Yeah. They're fine right now, but I believe they're grandfathered in, but they're not going to meet current codes, and finding parts is getting harder and harder. You're talking 1987, and I think a little later for the Johnson building. Dave's got some cool slides in here. I wanted to motivate y'all. Wake up. quickly, talking about their strategic plan, our current strategic plan, I want to get kind of give you the highlights of, I'm not going to go through the whole, 20-page slide presentation. This is it. We've talked about this at the past board meeting. I just kind of want to give you a dashboard of kind of where we're at on some of this. Obviously the accelerator, that's, who knows, if we get it, we're great. If we don't get it, we got a lot more work to do just to get to where we are now. The Collins building, we've got some ideas on what we can do with it. We talked about that, just going ahead with the renovation. I'd like to talk about that more when we get into strategic planning, into the details. Michael's done a great job with the startups programs. Cluster mapping, the OEB did that for us. The business attraction side and the airport partnerships, I put yellow next to there because, as you've seen, there are things in the works. And we made a conscious decision when we hired Michael that, understanding what was coming down the road with OEV, that we would focus our resources on the startup side, and then we'd be prepared when OEV caught up with all the things they were doing, and we'd start working with them on that business attraction side. And obviously, the airport partnership side is an important one for us to be working on. Innovation Parkway, I put a check there because, we just got to get people to buy into Michael's thing, Innovation Parkway. Trails, again, by April 1st, unless the only potential problem there is if we go out to the RFP and we get some crazy number, but so far I think the engineer has been pretty spot on, and we do have a revised estimate that's still within our number, so I think we're good there. We're just trying to look to see if there's anything else we can do. I will tell you, we had a little surprise when we came into work Monday morning. The pond was actually flooded up above where the trail's going. So my first call to the engineer was, is this a problem? And he said, no. He said, because there's no velocity, the trail would not wash out with the way we're constructing it and the material that we're using. So we're good there. But I'm also going to have them investigate to make sure we don't have any debris obstructing the overflow, which drains into this pond over here. We could observe that it was overflowing into that pond because that pond was draining into its overflow. But the rate at which the water was draining over here was faster than it was draining over here. So we're gonna investigate that to make sure we don't have any problems. I don't know how many of you noticed the new signs coming in today. Anybody see?
Not.
Okay. So with Denise's help and Stephanie's help, so we did the monument signs before. I don't know if you saw this, but we also have two other signs at entrances that are more the metal signs. One on Levy and one on Potsdamer. And Potsdamer. So we have two new signs that have the white backgrounds that look like the ones that are on the monuments, just to kind of upgrade the look a little bit. We're gonna try to, we're gonna paint signs as we go, and we're gonna see if we can't find some ways to do, kind of replace some things on the fly rather than try to do a big expenditure all at once, just as we have the funds. So we'll keep working on that. These issues have come up. We've got to get further down the road on this on the PD and CNR, and then you heard on these two issues here whether or not it's going to make sense to do that. We can talk about that as we get into the strategic planning details. We've been very fortunate on the economic sustainability portion. I don't know that we can take a lot of credit for it happening, but sometimes it's just building the relationships with the right people and being ready to go and responsive to their needs, and that's what we were able to do. We did do a trial. We actually used Telcor to see how that would work on the Morgan building. To be honest, I wasn't real thrilled with what results we got.
And prior, did we get zero results?
Yeah.
well, I mean, not even a lead or anything.
The only lead we got came from FAMU, and that's one we would have had anyway. I was working with Tim Moore.
Right.
We just couldn't get we couldn't get their end figured out on the funding side, so that's why it didn't happen. Yeah. But we worked with them for quite a bit on that. They did help us a little bit on some of the materials that we needed to provide. They held some of the meetings, but again, we had no results. They didn't generate any additional leads outside of FAMU. So I think that's a good lesson for us.
Yep.
Which is why what OEV is doing is much more important than I think maybe working with the broker. Marketing and promotion, obviously Denise's presence here has helped us tremendously on that. She did a fantastic job on merging our brands and updating the website. If you haven't gone on and seen that, please do. We still have a lot of work to do on the community engagement side. We've started some projects. We didn't have any success with the last one we attempted, but it was a good effort. We do need to figure out how to get more resources for marketing. Obviously, even like this morning when we talked about this site selection magazine, that's about it for the year for us, I think, what funds we have. So unless we want to, you know, obviously dig into some reserves. But obviously the engagement of board members and community events, we need to find a way to help you all get the word out. And a more formal marketing plan. Again, I think that ties in with what OEV is doing. And that's part of what we got to look at is how we're going to put all these pieces together to tie what we're preparing for and being, you know, ready, set, go, and what OEV is doing. And obviously, that's a big part of what we're going to dig into. And then the organizational stuff. Obviously, the most important thing I think that happened out of all of that was being able to develop the staff. We've gone from me and an administrative assistant to the staff that we have today, which really gives us the capacity to do some great things. So I'm real excited about that. Any questions about that?
Nice looking slide. Mm-hmm. Lots of green and check marks.
Lots of green, yeah.
And this is a good place to be on. You don't do everything on your strategic plan, likely.
Ever,
right. I think this is, I like it, the visual.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I asked Ron to be available to do two things right off. You heard both of them. I think it's very important that we understand where we are financially, to see where we were at the end of the year. We're all obligated as a board to understand that. We go over it kind of real quickly as part of our, agenda each time, but we don't really look at it.
Yeah.
So this was the
one
time of the year. But this was the time I think that we need just to understand it really better. The second thing, I think it was real good, even though Ron does this periodically, just to kind of see where we were with that current strategic plan and then move from there. University Park Strategies, Ron.
Yeah, so first of all, I give Denise all the credit for finding this. When she was doing her market analysis, she ran across this article, which I just thought really helped to sort of capsulize where we're at and where maybe we want to look at going. And the strategies that we adopt will impact that. But also, we have to understand the constraints of those strategies based on the environmental factors that we have to deal with, both from the university side to the community and to our own capabilities in terms of our management. And so this article really just talked about this two-dimensional matrix, which was the degree of specialization versus the level of development services offered by the research park. And so I'm not going to go through all of this in great detail because hopefully you've had a chance to read it, but you know, these are the key elements that determine where you fall. And I give you like a second and a half to figure out where we fall right now.
I did try to read the article.
Okay.
It was pretty grim. And, I mean, it's just been a long time since I've read a research.
Yeah, research article.
I appreciate you doing this.
Okay.
And yeah, but I thought it was very it was a great idea.
You know, I think the researchers in the room probably heard about sign no problem. But
yeah, I'm just saying for myself.
So. I know, we actually, Denise and I said the same thing.
Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, it takes me hours to get through this. This is really hard.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was a researcher at one point myself, but once you get away from it, it's like, wow, it's a lot of words.
Yeah. So in my my opinion, I think we're landlords right now.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at, and I'll go through some of the other issues with this, but I think it's going to be hard for us to specialize to any degree. Even though we're talking about a particular, you know, magnetics as a specialization. To me, magnetics is not a specialization. It encompasses too many things, right? Because it's life sciences and materials and a lot of other things. So. Energy. I think it's going to be hard to get there. I think when you look at the things that we can do, I think more on the coach side, which it's interesting in the article, one thing they do talk about, and they sort of interchangeably talk about research parks and incubators. Okay, it's not, this doesn't just apply to research parks. It really isn't as much about incubation. So on the incubation side, I do think we're going to end up more on the coach side. We're going to have higher levels of development services and probably a little bit lower level of specialization. The downside to that is services cost money. So it's more expensive to be a coach than it is to be a matchmaker because, you know, you specialize, you have once, you know, you can have a more limited set of tools, more focus. On the other side, you've got to have broad experience in a lot of different industries to be helpful. So I don't know if you can read that. This was just in the article, some of the examples of different research parks and their level of specialization. This is what I wouldn't have guessed. I didn't realize RTP was had low specialization.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then this is the terms of development, and I focus as much over here in terms of what kinds of things they offer. But again, RTP is low on that, so they're basically a landlord. So landlord is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I think that's kind of the interpretation that we've had over time is that, you know, we're just a landlord. Well, apparently they've done fairly well being a landlord.
Can I ask you a question real quick? That actually doesn't surprise me on the research triangle because I have heard comments that everyone wants to be like the research triangle, but you wouldn't duplicate that right now because they hit a time when that worked for them, but you need to be more than landlord. Is that for them? Okay. So the other question, and I did not get all the way through the article, but so this is very helpful, I will say. I get what you're saying about the degree of specialization, but is there anything in there about, you had mentioned environment before, our degree of specialization today, being the first incubator of this type in the region, could be much lower than where we are in 10 years, 20 years from now, for a new incubator or where we are with our incubator or our research park. Is that true, and should we look at those other categories as longer-term goals, or just be content with kind of the coach?
Well, I think the next piece really kind of talks about some of that, which is what is the fit?
Chart.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, I can't take credit for it because I just cut and pasted it out in the article. But anyway, so it's really about the fit. I mean, you can't just decide to be a matchmaker and not have the other pieces around
it. Right.
Okay. So. And if you don't have the fit, what pieces can you change to create a better fit? So I think that's the key. And this next slide, everybody got that. They have the internal strategic fit and the external strategic fit determines, you know, kind of what strategies you work. It's one thing to have a strategy, it's another to fit and will work. Did you get your picture?
I did. Okay. I love pictures. I love visuals.
Okay, you have the article, by the way.
Yeah. I'll read it as I'm driving to Mexico Beach every day.
I'm sure we can get an audio version.
Well, that would be good.
Yeah, so to me, this is kind of the key takeaway, which is, you know, what kinds of things do you need in order to have a good fit? So they looked at these three areas. One is the university's capabilities and resources, and then the management team of the research park, and the regional environment, so the ecosystem, and the industry base. So you can kind of see, you know, you're going to, so if we want to be a coach, okay, does the university mission, objectives, resources, capabilities, and have startup capabilities, okay?
Yeah.
Are they locally, I believe this is, are they locally focused?
Mm-hmm.
And then, do they see the research park as a not-for-profit, or is it about a money-making venture? So I would say we're pretty close on most of this. And again, I think there are varying degrees of matching on these factors. The management team. You know, you do have some business development experience and some general business experience. I don't know industry-specific. I don't know about Michael, but my industry-specific in the food service industry, corrections, and water utilities.
I haven't been able to use it yet.
not so far. So we had, I would call that general business experience for the most part. So I think between us, I think we've got some of this covered. And then the regional environment, none of those actually hit the coach sector, which is interesting. But I think we're all trying to build a more robust business development ecosystem. And again, that focused industry-specific base, I don't know that we're going to have that. So that's all I have on that. Is there any other questions I can
comments,
answer?
Comments, questions?
Well, is this something that we need to use as we go forward today, a sort of fill-in-the-blank thing? I mean, is it that useful? I don't think I understand it quite well enough.
I didn't expect to have this. I just want you to know that we have to consider these environmental factors when we think about the strategy that we're looking for. We all know that we don't want to just stay a landlord. I mean, that's pretty evident with the mm-hmm. things that we're doing. We're trying to develop these other things. But we do have to consider the level of specialization in terms of our strategy. Mm-hmm. And do we have the capability to develop a specialized strategy? And I don't think any of us really think we're going to do that.
So in summary, we should maybe, I guess you're saying, move a little further away from landlord, but to where?
I think we're looking at coach.
Yeah. Moving more toward coach.
And so that would seem to indicate that magnetics, if that's a major push for this community, and we're trying to be the magnetic capital of the world, then we should be thinking about how do we engage that expertise on the board, in our overall strategy, to me, because we don't really, I mean, I'm glad Dr. Bai is on the team now, but, and you probably have more of that experience than anybody in the room or on the team, but we should probably be thinking, yes, and Dan Foss, but how else do we build on that? You know, how do we, if we want to get closer to a specialization that's going to fit in with the community, that seems like we all need to get an education in magnetics and get some more people engaged with us in a collaborative way or partnership or mentorship or something.
I don't understand how we're going to get very much past landlord status if we've got 765,000 square feet available. This is not enough. Potentially we could be full and be full-time landlords, and there may be nothing wrong with doing that. You know, if we got the right kind of people to fill in that 700,000 square feet of space. I don't know if it needs to be all magnetics. I don't think that's the landlord model. It's mm-hmm. more general. But I don't know, I think that's the discussion we're going to have today. I think this is very timely.
Yeah.
This conversation all morning has been very timely. But
one thing I've always thought, longer term, thinking out loud, is our charter allows us to be more than just this park, just research and development, or research, I'll say, mostly. And maybe with the city, partnering with the city, with their 500 acres they have, and become, this is one thing, and the Commerce Park is another, and they both roll up into Leon County Research Development Authority. And then we manage two parks, maybe. I've always said this, there'd be a day when we sort of said we finished our objectives here. Where do we go next, and what do we accomplish, and how do we make it bigger? So maybe, strategically thinking, longer term, we say what besides this? And maybe that's where we get a little bit more of further away from landlord, more coaching or something else, I don't know. Well, that's just something to think about.
Maybe marrying what you say and what Kristen said earlier this morning about there's going to be a Hurricane Michael supplemental coming
right
at some point. Why not partner with the airport?
I would love to.
Why not do another incubation facility
yep.
at the airport focused around that
yep.
that opportunity? And let not worry about the extending the landlord model into another 500 acres. Focus on that incubation and focus on that next supplemental. And take the expertise that we've got by hopefully winning this award to the next step.
Do you sense that the airport authority would be open to such a partnership?
I think the not only would the airport, but I think the mayor, based on what he said today, would be absolutely a moving force behind something like that.
Boy, the mayor had some positive comments today.
Yeah, sure did.
Kristen.
So, Ray, I love where you're both going with that, and I think we can connect this with what you said about magnets and other things like that. What we just heard from Mayor and from Christina and Rebecca particularly, to me, is something that I think we've been looking for a long time, which is quite bluntly looking outside of what we currently know and how we've done economic development for a long time. We've been on this track, but there's been a few things holding us back in different ways. Getting involved in magnets first that's what we needed to do. We had a damp pause, everything else, but I agree with you. We're going to see this, I think, expand rather rapidly because things related to magnet tech are diverse, but we've got a lot of other things going. So as we build the expertise for the recruitment, mm-hmm. I think we will see other things come, be possibilities. And we also have companies that do a lot of innovative work and are exporting things or working around the country that aren't well known here. We market to other businesses that are here. So the reason why this is on my mind connecting the properties, this is something I didn't say earlier, and Dave, it may be 8 years that you've been talking about another research park, another piece of property for us. We got some clarity at the Blueprint meeting in September on the OEV money for the airport. And what David said, I don't know, maybe Ed asked, maybe you did, Ron, where's the money for kind of the shovel-ready sites, for the site that we can recruit a business and come in and it's ready to go? He said there might be a little left over. That he's got more work to do on that. So we don't have a lot of money. When I looked at the OEV budget, we don't have a lot of money to activate the property around the airport. It led me right back to this meeting and thinking about your comments in the past and extending our umbrella. So it's bonding authority, other things like that, over some of the property around the airport, that wondering whether or not there was a partnership there. And the reason why that might be of interest now to city and county and OEV versus a few years ago is we have more clarity on where the property is. But OEV or Blueprint just decided to bond a lot more of the projects, the convention center and other things, than we had originally anticipated. We're front-loading a lot. I think there's going to come a time real soon where OEV and Blueprint can't do as much on that, and we may be able to provide some benefit. We got to look at the numbers, everything like that, but if they're really stepping up the recruitment side and yet they don't know how to get it shovel-ready, that might be the opening for this partnership to kind of go forward because we have some assets that they may need. That is just something that's been on my mind the last few months. I don't think, from my perspective, we haven't been ready until now. But the recruitment has to be there. And the last thing I'd say, and I'm sorry, is more than a second incubator, back to the coaching, when I asked the question about the environment and what the assets are now, we may specialize more as time goes on. But what I hear yesterday in a meeting, 2 days ago in a meeting, constantly is light manufacturing and prototype manufacturing and things like that. If we were going to go in and apply for more money from an EDA grant, that's what's on my mind right now. From existing businesses, G5 Engineering has said that, to startups, to others. So just forgive me for going on for a second, but this is wrapping in a few of the things you all have said, but that I do believe there's an opportunity if we wanted to look outside of our own property, and only if the recruitment end at OEB is as exciting as what we just heard, and I think that it will be, because we need that, or else it's just taking on more property.
I'm not sure I'm ready to say anything, but what occurred to me, it would be being more of a landlord, but it would be kind of being a super landlord.
It's a landlord with a focus that has those resources, yeah.
And I think we should think, too, we have a park that we, you know, when we lose a tenant, we scramble, who can we fill it with? Mm-hmm. And we fill it with an entity. And that may or may not be the highest, best use of the park. So if in 3 years we had more of the kinds of companies that we want to have here, I think that would be a success. So just, so you know, maybe we capture that somehow, that we have a higher utilization of the right kind of, or the ideal
mix.
Kind of company.
Yeah.
And that's, oh, go ahead.
Eric?
Well, I was going to slightly change the subject back to a little something that Ray talked about. This number of 700 and some odd thousand potential square feet of within the park for construction. I'm wondering what type of analysis went into that. And the reason I say that is that when we were looking for sites or deciding on sites for the IRCB, we were looking at a couple lots that FSU owns, basically across the street from the Mag Lab versus the corner of Levy and Engineering where we selected, based upon the geotech report that we got. And so I'm wondering if there's much understanding about the geotech status of LCRDA property, because I can tell you that the lots, whatever it is, 4C and 5C, whatever it is, across the street from the Mag Lab, which backs up to, it's either a detention pond or a lake or whatever it is, was going to be unsuitable for that type of a building. And in some ways, people were wondering what kind of, it would be suitable for anything, you know, maybe a parking lot or something.
What's wrong with it?
There's a big sinkhole possibility.
That's what I thought. It's
waterless. Right. And so even in the building site that we are going to use, the slab that this is going to be built on is several feet thick.
Yeah.
So that it can essentially float if there is a problem there with subsiding soil or anything like that, that it could prop itself up. There'll be piles and all that kind of good stuff, but it's also going to have, I think at one point I heard something like 5 foot thick.
That's expensive construction.
Yeah. So that it can support the weight of the building based upon just essentially floating almost thin air in some ways. So whether that those kind of conditions exist in other areas that perhaps LCRDA owns, is kind of the question. And it certainly would get to what the real potential square footage is that can be built in the park itself.
The 765,000 comes from what's authorized by the PUD. It isn't what we could necessarily physically do. So you're right, and that's part of that, ready, set, go. We got to get ready, and part of that is doing the geotech work to understand what's really developable, because we can't go sell a lot and then find out, we can't develop it.
Right.
So, yeah, we need to have that work done and basically have a shovel ready.
I think that would be a wonderful strategic goal.
Yep, me too.
It's on my list.
And to double down on that, Ron, you'll be maybe proud of me, but I have a stack this big with all of the work we did on covenants, restrictions, on everything like that. Went back through it, and I did remind Ben again that he had offered, this is Ben Hingry with planning department and blueprint, to help us work through that. But it did occur to me, and something I was going to ask about today, if we were at this point where we need to move more quickly, it may be that we need to look at a budget number for some consultant to help us push through this. If we are just simply too busy, Melissa's too busy, you're busy, everything else, this is how we would make money in the future. So that was something I was, it's not just a strategic goal, but I think there could be money attached to this. But identifying a consultant, in light of what you said, Eric, I think it's a good point to identify someone who could assess how we become shovel ready. So what natural feature inventory and geotech surveys and things like that could we do in advance, like we're doing with the archaeology? So maybe that's a way to kind of expand that and get the covenants, restrictions, the PUD corrected finally, and that won't cost as much because planning department would help, but then add that other piece in.
I don't think it's necessary to reinvent the wheel too much in terms of how to go about this. I can tell you that the company or the people we had do this drilled a lot of holes on a lot of different spots to find out what's down 60, 70 feet, and that's how they came up with this. So there's a cost associated with that, and I don't know how comprehensive one has to be. I imagine you would say in a particular lot, well, this is where the best place to build a building would be, so focus on that area. But I think being able to prove that where the limitations are, if there are no limitations, would be pretty important as we're trying to go forward.
I don't know the answer to this, but are there, based on the geotech assessment, are there different kinds of buildings that could be approved? Some shouldn't be approved, but some could be?
I believe so, yeah.
So, I mean, one thought would be to have us focus on the R&D component and work with the airport on the light manufacturing component. Because our limited space, if we could build on as much of that 765,000 square feet, the more, the better. If light manufacturing buildings would be eliminated because of some of the limitations.
Yeah, well, I think, I could be kind of overstating the case here a bit, because the kind of building that the RCB will be is a scientific building, and so consequently, it's going to need to have, you know, minimal vibration, all these sorts of things for the kind of work we want to do in there. The sites that were bypassed probably would be useful for, it might take some remediation, I don't really know, but would probably be useful for a single story warehousey sorts of things.
It's right next to Danfoss. So. And you guys actually looked at that land before you decided to go the other direction.
In the back.
Yeah. And what did you guys find?
We didn't go too far until you gave us that particular opportunity.
Yeah. So the, you know, I think part of it may be, what does it take to get it ready and what kinds of things can be put on it? And I think we have to look at all of our land that way. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're going to have to hire some consultants to do that. And I think, to me, that is step one. Is in the getting ready part, is we've got to have land that's ready to go. And then the other part is looking at our existing facilities and what can we get, how can we get those ready to go as well, particularly the Morgan building. But
so did that previous report, you know, that was done a long time ago, don't we have a, what am I thinking about? There was a plan, an assessment, a something of the whole park and all the properties. Is that even a starting point? I don't. It's been years since I've looked at NFI.
The natural features inventory was the only thing.
No, I think
what you're talking about is the plan unit development, is the PUD where, but we went through and looked at the square footage, looked at the use of the property, we made some changes with all of that.
I was hoping somebody would just pop up and go, "You sent it to me one time, Ron. It was done years ago," to say, "Here's the property, this is how it would best be used, this is how it should be configured." It's like a
master plan.
A master plan, yeah.
They did a master plan long time ago.
So it may just not be useful at all.
I don't think it's useful today. No.
Okay.
For example.
But I think that's what we, I think we need.
We do need a master plan as well.
That says, okay, this is what we have permitted. This is what is buildable. This is the different kinds of buildable.
That's what we're talking about. One of the changes that we made 5-6 years ago was that they had designated sites. They had one site designated for a hotel.
Yeah.
We took it all back to mixed use. Yeah. For example, so it actually gives us more flexibility. Yeah.
These are all things I want to get into this afternoon.
Yeah, sorry.
No, you're fine. You're absolutely. This was what I'm hoping to pull out with all all the discussion we had this morning and what's going on now. I have a basic process I'd like to work through. As you know me, I like to have a process.
Well,
absolutely.
We have chaos.
Yes, right.
So do we need to hear from Denise? Or
we're ready for Denise if everybody else is ready.
We got to get Dave's slide up.
Well, you got to get some slides up here.
Like the colors.
Yep. Well, thank you.
I'll do this.
All right. Thank you. And a lot of the stuff that I have is a lot of the things that you're going to find is actually supportive of a lot of the conversations that we've had this morning. But I'm also going to provide a little more context. This really isn't an analysis of different university research parks. I don't have a lot of numbers because specifically all research parks are completely different. Not one is unique. There's actually a quote saying that if you've been to one research park, you've only been to one research park. So we have some determinations that we need to get into before we find who our competitors are to be able to do a comparative analysis. So here's just a little bit of an overview of some of the different things that I'm going to briefly talk about. I'm going to try to go through it pretty quickly so that we can get to lunch and then really get into the workshops. But I'm going to talk about some industry trends, competitors specifically to Innovation Park, incubators in Florida, more specifically incubators in Tallahassee, co-working space, and my shot at a SWOT analysis and some key takeaways. So, before we get into the all the information, I kind of wanted to give a background of how I came up with this and my conclusions. I reviewed a ton of different peer articles that have been within the last 10 years. There's not a lot of information on university research parks within the last 2 to 3 years, so I had to go farther back. In addition to that, I also used a list from the United Nations Education, Science, Cultural Organization and the AURP to come up with university research park specifically, and I looked at all of them and provided an analysis. And as I said, not one research park is the same as another, so this is kind of just an overview.
What would you say the percent of the university parks are actually controlled by the universities?
I would probably say about 60 to 70 or more.
Yeah.
And so, where are these 108?
These are only in the United States.
Okay.
So while all of them are different, there are some common elements to successful research parks. One is soft infrastructure, which is providing different education, skills, and training. Funding, capital, either for startups as well as building as well. Metrics, measuring performance, leasing, how well our organizations here are doing. Champions, these are people that provide high level attention to support the cause and really grow. This is reaching out to senators and those who are in public policy and being able to be advocates for us. Leadership is having the right people in place at the research park, including staffing, for instance, bringing Michael in for entrepreneurship. And then bridging institutions, which is working closely with the universities as well as economic development organizations to really help grow the park and move forward. So university research parks are not only benefited from the universities, but there's also a mutual benefit. These include higher publication rates, more patenting activities, hiring better staff and scientists, and getting a lot more grants. One thing I've also observed with research parks is some require some type of collaboration in order to be at the park. This could be either by having R&D projects with them, hiring interns, mentoring. For instance, Dan Foss does the senior design at the College of Engineering. They bring in mentors and really, they connect with them. Some common goals and objectives for research parks includes creating an environment of innovation and entrepreneurship, offering potential opportunities for faculty and students to work in the industry, serving as a landing pad for national and international companies to relocate to a park, being a place to expand and grow as well, commercialization of university property, also redeveloping and developing neighborhoods around the park. We've been talking about that a little bit. And then generating income for the institution as well as the universities. So how do we achieve these goals? It's through industry-university collaborations. This includes partnerships, the access to equipment that a lot of that's too expensive for a lot of companies to buy themselves, business commercialization services like business planning, and then major research park facilities, which include specialized labs, instructional facilities, which we cannot have here due to our covenants and restrictions, food, restaurants, conference centers, and other educational facilities. One thing I wanted to bring up here is we've talked about mixed-use development. From my observations, there is actually a small amount of research parks that have mixed-use development, and the ones that do are in an urban setting, not kind of in our area.
Yeah.
So that could be something to look at as we get into the strategic plan. So some top reasons companies actually move into the park. The number one is collaborative opportunities with the university. However, the other four is basic real estate, quality of buildings, flexibility of leasing. This really shows that understanding the basic real estate can't be ignored, and we should look at that as well as we move forward. So some key challenges that university research parks face include, of course, identifying a tenant base and growing the tenant base. 78% of university research parks say that this is a problem. Yeah. Other problems include capital for development and renovations, equity for tenants, financing wet labs, multi-use space, and competition from others, as well as a lot of companies going virtual. So going back into the typology that Ron talked about, I've identified some different research parks that apply to each one. For instance, NASA is very specialized and they don't offer any entrepreneurship programs, neither does the Massachusetts Biomedical Initiatives. Iowa State is very focused on agriculture, and they have incubators that are specifically for that. And USF also has an incubator, and their entire research park is actually focused on biomedical only. They have a lot of relationships with the Moffitt Cancer Center down there. Landlord Cummings Research Park is a main one that you might know. Los Alamos Research Park, which also has part of the Mag Lab, and then the University of New Orleans. And then those that would be identified as COACH is Stanford Research Park, RTP, and Dandini. Now, these are kind of my opinions of how they fit. For instance, I understand that Stanford Research Park and RTP, they apply to a lot of different industries, but they also have a lot of programs. University Research Park would also probably be considered a COACH, in my opinion. Cummings Research Park is just landlord-based. They don't really have any entrepreneurship programs.
Where is that, Denise?
That's in Huntsville, Alabama.
I visited there last year.
Yeah.
It's interesting, but it's huge.
It is. It has a movie theater and stuff, too. But, which is interesting.
They have their own shopping mall.
Yeah. So, the way that I look at this is, there no strategy fits, is a one-size-fits-all. There's so many different reasons why different strategies are used, and any of them can be successful. So, in comparison to a North American University Research Park, this is kind of a typical profile that was taken in 2012.
Sure.
We are a lot larger. Most research parks are 119. We have more buildings. We don't have an incubator, which is a problem because the average is a 25,000 square foot incubator. But one thing that I also wanted to point out specifically is that the tenants, we have 30 residents versus 26. However, for profit, we have 10% for profit companies,
yeah,
while the average is 64%.
We have 77% university versus 24, and we have 13% government.
Just like Tallahassee.
Yes.
Can I stop you right
there? Yeah, go ahead.
This is the best summary that I've seen of what we've learned about research parks, and anecdotally or actually in recent years. And that for-profit number, I visited Argonne National Lab, and just one lab, their percentage of corporate involvement in the lab outstrips what MagLab does.
Yeah.
And then, so it's not just the park itself, right? But our facilities in the park, our whole community doesn't, we haven't gotten that for-profit piece yet. So the recruitment efforts that OEB and others are doing, I'm wondering, I didn't think about this before, but if that's something to talk to Rebecca and Christina about, because they may find a company that's not ready to relocate, but they may not be aware of the resources at the Mag Lab or something like that to do to work with them in a corporate, you know, in a partnership on a particular research.
There's also a lot of different labs, like for instance, up in Tech Square, Delta has an innovation center. It's really small. I mean, it's not in their headquarters. It's a small little office, but they're located in Tech Square to be able to use the facilities that Georgia Tech has.
And that's something, I mean, it reminds me of Dan Foss and your innovation center. But jet propulsion or other, I mean, there are other ways that we could expand. It's not just MagLab, but you're absolutely right to do some of those things, and that's funding. The last thing I was going to say was that inversion, the university government agencies versus for-profit, I think is key to our financial struggles, because people lose grants, they lose other things like that,
So, well, I too will say that's one of the best charts I've seen. You didn't just do that.
I stole the average part. I made this up, but well, not made up. I found it.
Look at the employees. We're so far out.
We do. I mean, the Mac Lab alone, I think, has close to 500.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot, but.
I know I've said it in here before, but a number that I've used for years, since 15, was the Madison, Wisconsin Research Park that's built out, rock star. They're contributing $900,000 a year to their economy. We're already at $500,000.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got tremendous potential.
So as a drill down, and this is kind of off the grid, but did you glean anything out that dealt with the relationship of the companies that are locating in the parks? Because, you know, one of the primary things that kind of stands out, obviously, is the relationship, using Paul as an example, with the Mag Lab, with FSU and FAMU School of Engineering. But how about the relationship? Did you get anything of company to company in these parks?
Not specifically.
Okay.
Not for us, at least. Because I know, I mean, with Dan Foss, they use a lot of they use the College of Engineering, they use AFCAP, AME, and stuff. But we don't have the for-profit companies that are here.
Right.
In addition to Dan Foss, is really like New Energy, Nanostrata. These are very small startup companies, and they don't really have opportunities for networking just because they're not really in the same realm.
So where I'm kind of going with that idea, if you're trying to recruit and you're trying to do a focused kind of recruitment, you're really looking at collaboration of those companies, just not with the company to the university.
Correct.
So that's something to think about as we kind of move forward. If we're going to focus, it's like, okay, so what does that look like?
And I'll touch on that a little bit too.
Okay.
It's kind of a web, right?
Yeah.
It needs to relate to other, I mean, Danfoss could use other manufacturers.
Yes.
They don't duplicate what you do, but just for employees and stuff like that.
Exactly.
But I like where you're going with the question, that if we drill down from this one more step, what does that relationship look like at other research parks? And,
and part of that is the when you go back to the matrix, okay, the service offerings of the park, part of that's included in that. So what kinds of networking opportunities are there, for example, that you offer? And usually the park facilitates a lot of that.
Because you'd want people to play together.
Exactly.
That's what you're trying to get to.
Yep.
Well, this is real eye-opening. It gives me a better appreciation for what we have here today than maybe I realized that we
did. Yep.
Exactly. All right. So that's kind of where I'm at with industry trends. Now I'm going to go into a little bit more of a competitor analysis of who our competitors are. The truth is we really don't have any competitors because there's nobody else that's doing the exact same thing that we're doing. So the way that I came up with this is I looked at the competitors that are specifically in Florida. And one thing that's really interesting is that there is at least 10 research parks in Florida alone. That is the most in any state. So, yes, we when we came up with our charter and stuff, there was a lot of stuff going on in government, so a lot of people hopped on the train around the time that we did and afterwards. So the main ones that I wanted to look at is FAU, Research Park at FAU, down in Boca. They are 70 acres. Their main focus of industries is aerospace, aviation, medical imaging, IT and culinary. Their tenants support that. They do have a technology incubator, and one thing they also promote on their website is different collaborations that they're doing. This goes into showing how people are playing with each other and other people who see opportunities to come in. Other opportunities that they have is they also provide FAU resources, which includes access to libraries, access to career centers, and that's actually one very popular kind of perk, I call it, that most of the research parks offer to their residents. So that could be something that we should look into. Progress Park is where the Sid Martin incubator is. It's biotech. It was formerly UF, but that was sold in 2000. So they don't really have access. And they aren't really growing. They have a lot of vacant space with the exception of Sid Martin. Embry-Riddle, they are brand new. They only have one building, and it was built in 2017. It's called the Micaplex. That is where Sensitech Propulsion Technology unfortunately went to, which is why I included them, is because we are losing tenants, and they're growing. They have a lot of different cool aspects that are very, very targeted. Mm-hmm. So that's something to think about. It could be good or it could be bad, but they're going with them specifically. USF, they have 112 acres on USF property. Their incubator has a shared wet lab space that opened in 2014. And another aspect that's very interesting is 100% of the companies that completed their program have stayed in Tampa.
Interesting.
In addition to that, they have access to the USF Career Center, biz, recruitment, and different equipment that is at USF, as well as the Center for Entrepreneurship. And the final competitor that I wanted to talk about is Florida Tech over in Melbourne. They're on the Space Coast, which makes sense as to why they have aerospace and IT with Northrop Grumman, GE, Embraer. They don't have an incubator, so they are landlord-based, but because of their location, they're a successful and attractive area for companies to grow in.
Interesting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So moving into the wet lab incubator specifically in Florida, there's technically four because UF has two. Which we've already visited. UCF's Life Science Center opened up in 2018. It's only 10,000 square feet and it's biotech focused, as is the Tampa Bay Technology Incubator. Interestingly enough, all the wet lab incubators in the state of Florida are biotech focused. They don't focus on anything else.
Interesting.
And UCF is, that Lake Nona facility is, mm-hmm. I think, heavily funded by Florida Blue.
Yes.
Yeah. But Florida who? Florida Blue?
Mm-hmm. The Hub would probably be the only one that's not completely biotech focused, but at the same time, the Hub has a partnership with Sid Martin for biotech companies who reside in the Hub.
Is the UCF facility the old VGTI building?
It is the Guidewell Center. It was just built.
Oh, okay.
And let me just say, as someone who visited that, Christina and I went there, I think, 2 years ago, September. I think they've built out a good bit since then. Well, you have an opening in spring of 18.
Yeah, it's three levels.
Yes, yeah. So they didn't have the third level right. open, so we were there pretty early, and I think it was probably 17 now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
It is extraordinarily shiny. I mean, like, their central, like, conference area, I mean, the presentation room is off the chart. It's amazing. The cost was incredible, and I think that it fits within the reason. I mean, they're going to fill it up because of the other companies that are around them. But quite bluntly, we didn't walk out inspired as this would be attractive to the same type of companies that are going to UF or USF or here. So I think it's good to list. I mean, absolutely mm-hmm. list it. I'm going to be really curious to see if they rank as a competitor right. in the future, because I think they're just really different. Is right. that, from your look at it, is yes. that still...
Well, I think honestly they're trying to still kind of get focused. Since they've just opened, I think they're really trying to figure out what they're doing. But they are leveraging the area that it's like known and it's very medical based. And I think there is actually plans to build a research park around that at mm-hmm. some point.
Like Nona's doing incredible things. I mean, that it's been a long time in the making, but they have synergy,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a lot of different things happening in that area. The other thing I would say is these universities have created that innovation corridor. Is that what they call it? The innovation. I don't know.
That's
that
not
name.
Mean it's like.
But they are
yeah.
promoting themselves as an entity. So they have a magazine that
yeah.
that incorporates all of these entities together, which gives them a lot of you know, they're bigger than life,
right.
than each individual. So it's
exactly.
you know, I think that was a very smart move on their
mm-hmm.
part, and it's going very well.
Yeah, it is. Go ahead.
I'm so sorry, but you just reminded me of something that Mark Long said when we did our tour down at Sid Martin, which was for recruitment for other, he was willing to partner and said there was more partnerships and conversation. Am I right about that? Mike,
yeah,
you're nodding. So maybe it was, yeah, when we talked with him.
Oh, yeah. In fact, he actually is 100% occupied and would be happy to refer those that shouldn't be in Sid Martin out our way.
Yeah.
I understand the regionalism of those three, April, what you just said on co-marketing, but there may be an opportunity to kind of jump on that bandwagon.
And that's a big bandwagon.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that would give us some credibility for sure.
Yeah, yeah, they call it the Innovation Corridor, and I'm friends with the PR firm that does this magazine that promotes these parks together, and it's you know, they have it in the byline of their email address. They promote it pretty heavily.
All right. So talking about wet lab incubators, going on to other incubators, prototyping incubators specifically, there are 7 in the state of Florida. The closest ones to us are Gulf State College and Tech Farms. Those are both based in Panama City. Tech Toy Box is based in Gainesville, and the others are a lot farther away. They're interesting, however, all their capabilities are very similar. They're supercomputing, robotics, entrepreneurial experience, 3D printing, laser cutting, and machine shops. So they're not super specialized. However, these are the incubators in Tallahassee specific that we've identified. Dummy Station, they offer the program Get Started. In addition to their program, they offer 24/7 access to Dummy Station during those 6-month periods, as well as matches to mentors, advisors, and investors. However, they don't have wet lab space. And their membership is offered on different ways. They have like a 10 or 25 visit punch card. They also have monthly access as well. Innovation Hub is the FSU incubator. They focus on design thinking. They have digital fab labs, VR. But one thing that we need to think about when it comes to Innovation Hub is that these students are there for 4 years. Where are they going to go after those 4 years? Are they going to stay in Tallahassee, or are they going to have to go somewhere else in order to get the same assets that they're getting at the Innovation Hub? The last incubator is the GCC Center for Innovation that is in the process of kind of determining where their direction is going and their strategies.
Isn't Diatech, aren't they still at Innovation Hub, our tech grant winner?
They are, but I know they're looking for different space. I don't know if it's because they have to leave. I think that's kind of part of it, but...
I think they do, and also TCC has been recruiting them pretty heavily.
Yeah. And then some co-working spaces. I know Ed talked about WeWork's potential, which could be something to look at. Other co-working spaces that are available in Tallahassee is Regents, which does pay-as-you-go, flexible plans, or fixed terms. I tried to get some information regarding office space. This is per square foot. So their office space is between $20 to $24 per square foot. Co-working is $13.90. And they also have a virtual office, which goes between $2 and $8. CoLab works as a monthly membership only, and it's $700 a month.
CoLabs is more of a marketing, creative type.
Yes, exactly. And they have a lot of open space to be able to kind of hang out. They do happy hours and different things as well. So just going into, as we go into our workshop this afternoon, I just wanted to give some of my insight into what some of our SWOT analysis. One is we're an established research park. We're less than three miles from the airport. I can tell you that because sometimes my drone does not go in the air in some places. We of course have the mag lab. And then we have a lot of other centers of excellences like FCAP, HPMI, CAPS, even CPAST with FAMU. We're also close to a joint college of engineering, which also has some HBCU opportunities as well. Some weaknesses, lack of retail nearby, which I guess that's being rectified as you kind of, as it becomes more and more connected. One thing that Riff talked a little bit about and addressed is we don't have any specific targeted industries. When we have targeted industries, that's when we can be able to have companies more work together and not just with the universities. I think we need to determine some of those to really start targeting along with OEB. We have lack of perks for residents. We have the food truck, but that's just about it for perks. Some other suggestions that I have in that opinion is maybe once the Seminole Golf Course is open, maybe working with them to potentially get discount memberships or something that can entice them and kind of be an added benefit. Some opportunities is the incubator, other Leon County and state incentives, and also the access to the two universities and state governments. And the threats I've already touched on a little bit is 10 other research parks. We've talked about the building and space to grow aspect too as well. So just some food for thoughts and my key takeaways is we need to start working more closely with our relationships with FAMU, FSU, and the College of Engineering. This could be creating a list of different assets that each university has and even TCC, and potentially being able to leverage private companies with the university to use shared equipment at a different cost, but being able to be part of that. Working with universities and the general area to determine what type of opportunities or perks can be provided to Innovation Park residents, showcasing the collaborative opportunities here, like Danfoss, working with OEB, looking at additional amenities. Another interesting tidbit that I saw through my research is about 28% of university research parks actually have a daycare center on premises. Could that be something that we should have here? Would that be used from our residents? That could be something to look at. And other things would be determining what incentives are available to those in the park. We've talked a little bit about the foreign trade zone the airport touched on. We are in a hub zone, but what other incentives are available for companies to locate to the park? And how do we better market those? And that is it for my presentation. Thank you for listening. What questions? Go ahead.
You mentioned, this gets back to your discussion a few slides ago relative to wet lab incubators. And I think it was USF that had a biotech focus,
yes.
You mentioned, and I saw that they had a drug discovery institute. That was there. Okay. So just as some general information, FSU was able to lure away from Ohio State University a professor in the medical school who's in the process of setting up a drug discovery institute at FSU. Now, whether or not, they probably start small,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know whether they have a footprint in the building there that they can do this, but if it works and goes well, it's gonna need some more space. So,
yeah.
So that's something
that
down the road.
That would be a great offset, yeah, definitely. Any other questions?
Well, first of all, let me say, this is a document that we all be able to have a copy of and really.
Sure, I actually have a 100-page report. I can also send you as well.
No,
good.
Maybe just your slides.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. But I suspect that while you have educated us quite well, I think probably you've learned an awful lot putting this together.
Yes.
And so you've made yourself, in my opinion, certainly more educated to what we're doing. And so it's been good for not only this board, I suspect it's been very good for our staff. Mm-hmm. I compliment you on how well you put this together, how organized it is, how informative it is. Job well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very well. I applaud you.
When we determine who our target industries are specifically, I would be able to go back and actually determine who our main competitors are in the United States for research parks. And I think once we do that, we can really get more of the competitive edge and understanding of where we should go.
I think this would be good for Christina and Ed and airport people and all of them just to have a briefing by you.
Oh.
That's how well I think this is.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you, is lunch ready? Lunch is ready.
I had a quick comment.
Okay, quick comment. I'm with you.
I didn't believe you when you said Florida had the most research parks, so I researched it. And we do, the second being California, and then Texas and Massachusetts and North Carolina, all tied. But we're ahead by four.
Yeah.
Over California, which shocked me, so great information.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
I saved your fingers, hopefully, from checking it out. Not you, the rest of
them. All right. Lunch?
Unless Ron has something he wants to put in right here, I think this will be good. And we designed this as sort of a working lunch. So let's take 15 minutes or so, take a break, get your meal, bring it back in here. And in order to maximize our time here today, we will then continue while you eat. We are at this point in recess.